Welcome to You Only Know Half, a weekly podcast about Jamaicans in America. This episode of You Only Know Half is brought to you by the law offices of Dahlia Walker, practicing immigration law throughout the United States, and the Jamaica Tourist Board, Jamaica, heartbeat of the Caribbean. I'm your host today, Dahlia Walker Huntington, and this week's episode features Sandra Fatmi Hall from Jamaica. Sandra is a community activist in Central Florida and has used her management skills to launch organizations and efforts to enrich her community. Sandra, welcome to You Only Know Half.
Thank you so much, Ms. Dahlia. I so appreciate you and just the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I truly am humbled.
Oh, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. And as we get into the discussion, people will understand what I mean by busy schedule to be with us on the podcast. So Sandra, tell me, where in Jamaica are you from exactly?
I hail from the East and from the beautiful, beautiful parish of St. Thomas. I was born in Kingston and raised in the parish of St. Thomas.
What? Where in St. Thomas?
Morant Bay. So super excited.
So you see that already, you know, here is the name of the podcast is You Only Know Half. Here comes some information that I'm sure a lot of people did not know. So tell me about growing up in Jamaica. What was your family like? Who did you grow up with?
Well, I grew up with my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And I lost mom at an early age, though. I lost mom at seven years old. Yes, at a very young age. My dad was involved in public works. And my mom, before passing, worked for the post office in Golden Grove. She was the postmistress.
Oh, okay. All right. So there you go. So you said Golden Grove, Morant Bay. I'm sure people who are listening, you know, get a picture of where that's from. But where did you go to school out in Morant Bay?
Well, first I went to a private prep school at first. Then I had the great opportunity of taking the common entrance exam. I hope everyone remembers that grew up in Jamaica.
I better remember that because I took common entrance and I better remember that.
Absolutely. And I passed at a very young age. I took it the first opportunity that I became eligible. So I passed at 10, but I started at 11. So I started Morant Bay High School was my next step.
Okay. All right. Interesting. You see, I'm learning things too. So there have been past podcast guests also from Morant Bay High School. So that's an interesting connection. And what was school like when you were a teenager growing up and without your mom? What was that like?
School was a must. School was important. That was instilled at a very, very young age. That you have to focus on education. So I was very competitive as well. And I know no one remembered who came in second. So I gave it my all in school. And while I was there, I had the opportunity just right after starting to get involved in track and field. So it was a opportunity through education to stay focused on education. I mean, back then it was home economics classes. Then you had track and field. You were very, very involved in the school plays. So there's so much there that is a definite basic foundation that you're able to build upon. So I touched on every single thing, spelling bee. It was really, really memorable.
Very. It sounds like a rich upbringing.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, it was.
Oh, very good. So if you were in track and field back then, you must be very excited every time the Olympics comes around and World Championships for Jamaican sprinters.
Oh, Miss Dahlia Walker Huntington, that is a passion of mine. Believe me, I don't leave the TV. I don't, whatever is on that has to do with track and field, especially the 100 and the 200 meters, because I was a sprinter back then. I'm telling you, whatever I have to stop and stay focused, that's what I do. I am really, and I have my flags, I have my shirt on. I am just super duper screaming everywhere. Now, you know, we're here in our adopted home, but I have to tell you, I will always root for Jamaica first.
Yeah, I think 99.9% of Jamaicans living overseas rooting for Jamaica when the Olympics come around. No questions about that. So you're talking about your adopted home. What was the decision that drove you to leave Jamaica and to come to America?
Well, at such a young age, the decision was made for me. So mm-hmm. I didn't have a choice, because once I lost my mom at 7 years old, I stayed in Jamaica for a few years. So my first trip to the United States to see my aunts that lived here mm-hmm. since the late 50s and 60s mm-hmm. was right after my mom passed. And I still continued to high school. I left Jamaica really in going into third form. That's when I left Jamaica, where my grandmother decided it was time for me to come up and then get acclimated to my new home. So just visiting mm-hmm. wasn't enough.
Right.
Right. So we moved to Brooklyn. Good old Church Avenue, East 18th Street area in Brooklyn.
Okay. So you did the traditional Jamaican move, was from Jamaica to New York. So yes. And you moved to Brooklyn. So what was that like? I know you used to visit, but once you came and had to go to school now, what was that adjustment like?
Well, you know, that was rather interesting, I will say. Mm-hmm. Once I got here, you know, you were told, which I think most of us are told, you're super smart. You know, mm-hmm. you're coming in knowing all of these things. So I really, based on the knowledge and foundation that I came with, should have entered high school. But, you mm-hmm. know, there's always that, oh, no, we have to start them off, you know, at a lower grade, even though they're super duper ahead. So I started mm-hmm. junior high school in Brooklyn, junior high school 62. I'll never forget it. And yeah. then I started high school. The first day, I was super excited, but the first day, I won't say, was that great, because I didn't know that I was supposed to have a combination lock for the first day of school. Yes, my aunts didn't tell me, and I didn't know. This is a transition for me. Mm-hmm. So I trusted a young lady that says, no, go ahead and put your stuff in my locker. And I thought, oh man, she's really cool. She's nice. So I did just that. And of course, I'm excited because it's my first day of school. And my aunts gave me money and I had my money in there. Well, unbeknownst to me, she went through my bag and took my $20.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And we're talking about what decade is this? 70s or 80s?
80s. It was, you know what? Late 70s. Yeah.
And those days, $20 was a lot of money.
I know. I didn't even understand how I got so much. I realize now that it was really a lot of money. But I guess it was for lunch for the whole mm-hmm. week or something. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Wow. Well, what an experience. So how did you move on from that first day? Jolt, welcome to junior high school. How did you move on to adapt to this new school system?
Well, you know, I always had my sister around, and my sister, I know, said to me, okay, all right, so you know that wasn't right. So what I don't want to happen is for that to scar you in any way, that you don't want to mm-hmm. go back to school. She was always there with that kind of advice. So what mm-hmm. I did was I remembered what was instilled in me. I was annoyed, I will say. I watched that person from that day and the friends that she kept and the people that she was friends with. So I knew that wasn't a group that I belonged to. And mm-hmm. I found other friends that I loved their qualities. And even at such a young age, I knew what to look for after I got burned. So mm-hmm. I went on to high school. And you know what? You know what's funny? You're taking me way back, because we ended up, what's funny is that that young lady and myself ended up at the same high school.
Okay.
So, yes, ended up at the same high school. And I'll tell you, high school was pretty interesting. I ended up going to Sheepshead Bay High School. Mm-hmm. That was in an area that I must tell you had a high racism issue. in that area. That was close to the Garrison Beach area. And we had approximately 20 Blacks that attended the school. Now, I know I was zoned for Erasmus High School, but my aunts didn't want me to go to Erasmus because Erasmus High School, if you know, Brooklyn had a name since back then.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted me to go into nursing. So Sheepshead Bay specialized in, you know, gearing you towards nursing school. So I ended up
at
Sheepshead Bay High School. Well, that also was interesting because that's the first time I was ever called the N-word in my face.
And oh my goodness.
That was rather interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure that is a jolt to the system coming from Jamaica. So how did you react to being called the N-word?
Oh dear, I don't know if I can share that.
How old were you at the time? A teenager?
I was a teenager.
About 15, 16, yeah.
I was maybe even 14, 15. Yes, you're right. Around 14, 15. Well, that was a shock to my system. And the first time, and I believe that's the last time to my face. So, I hope you'll still love me after this. But I will say, I did take my shoe off.
Okay.
Yes.
And that says it all. That says it all.
I did.
14-year-old. Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, these are some of the things that, you know, we don't think about bringing or coming to America and going into the school system, how completely different it is, not just from an educational perspective, but a social perspective to fit in coming in as a new immigrant, which continues to be an issue today. But needless to say, you got over it. You graduated. What did you do after graduation? Did you go to work? Did you go to school? What did you do right after?
Right after, I went to LaGuardia Community College in Queens. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
That was more on the affordable side because community college was less.
Definitely. Right.
And it still is today.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Less than a 4-year institution. And went on to work full time. Mm-hmm. So I lived in one borough. I lived in the borough of Brooklyn.
Yes.
I worked in Manhattan and I went to school in Queens.
All at the same time.
All at the same time, taking full credits.
Oh my goodness.
Full credits, absolutely. And graduated on time and I paid for my education. I did.
So let me understand now. So you lived in Brooklyn, you worked in Manhattan, and you went to school in Queens. Did you work in the day or did you go to school in the day or at nights?
At nights. So I went to school, yes, I went to school 8 to 4. And then after work, I went straight on to school. So sometimes I didn't get home after taking a bus and a train because, you know, there was no car back then. Mm-hmm. You know, you couldn't afford that back then. So
you worked, you said you went to school 8 to 4, but you worked 8 to 4.
Yes, I worked 8 to 4. I worked 8 to 4 and then I went to school 5 until 9:30, 10.
Oh my goodness. And then you had to get yourself home from Queens to Brooklyn and then start all over again the next morning.
Yes. And that meant doing homework.
When did you study? When did you do your homework? When did you study?
I did my homework until 2 a.m. in the morning.
Oof.
Yes. So I got very little sleep. But you know, I have to give a definite shout out to this very inspirational mentor I had, Helene Tisch. I'll never forget her. She would give me a call sometimes in the morning because there are days sometimes that I got to work late, right? Oh. So I will confess that. So once I got to work once or twice late, she says, you know what? This is a lot for you. Why don't I give you a wake-up call to make sure that you're up? That never happened again. So it did happen in 1 week twice. And she says, you know, you can't do this.
Oh my goodness. Well, that, you know, definitely shout out to her for looking out for you and realizing what you were going through.
Yes.
Because that is quite a load. So when you finished school, did you continue to work? In what industry were you working in Manhattan?
You know, I stayed with an accountant. So my first love was accounting. So I wanted to minor in accounting and major in business, which is what I did. So after I finished LaGuardia Community College, I went on to a four-year York College in Queens. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was able to obtain my bachelor's there. And I continued to work in Manhattan in different industries. But mm-hmm. I even got to meet Roberta Flack through working for this accountant. Yes, because he was the accountant for her. Absolutely. Yeah. So I went to the Dakota, where she lived. So I got a lot of exposure back then that helped to shape my mind as to, gee, what is it that you wanted to do? So my first love, I wanted to be an attorney, like you. And my second love was to do banking. So that got fulfilled. Yes, the attorney part.
Good. So, you know, like a lot of Jamaicans, I said, you left Jamaica, you went to New York, you know, did the work full time and going to school full time thing, paid off for you and you continued. But how did you make that transition now from New York to Florida? What prompted that move?
Okay, that move was prompted by one, health. I developed asthma in New York from weather. You know, and yes, you know, in those warm apartments in New York, guess what I did? What I did was that there was so much heat coming from those apartments back in the days that I opened the window by cracking it just a little bit. And my head was right by the window. So I won't have to tell you the rest. So did get asthma. So as it got colder to me and weather became an issue, my sister moved to Florida. And when she moved to Florida, she would just rant and rave about how warm it is. It's so close to Jamaica. I know. You know, it's an hour flight, hour and a half the most. So I said, let me come down here. So I came down here with my siblings, loved it. And I said, this is where I want to be. It's so close to Jamaica, and I loved it. So yes, that move was prompted by health and my sister.
And the family, understood. So coming down to Florida now, how did you find your way to the United Foundation of Central Florida? How did that come about?
Wow. That is joy that you're asking me about now. United Foundation of Central Florida got started out of a need to empower communities one family at a time. Just think of being in an at promise community where all you're hearing about is the young people. They're just the worst in the area of Central Florida. Mm-hmm. The young people are breaking into cars. The community is not working together. And so much. And I was a radio personality at the time. And I said, you know, instead of just being a part of this negative conversation and just talking about it, why don't I do something about it? So got with Dennis Hall and a few more community leaders that were already here doing positive things and said, let's service the high school that's here. Let's service our elementary and middle school. Let's be the change we want to see. So we wanted a name of an organization where it was United. United is big for me. People working together for a common cause get so much more done. So United came about. Foundation. Solid foundation is a must. Anything not built on a solid foundation, as we've seen over all of our years, crumbles. And Central Florida is where we start, but that's not where we'll end. So that's how United Foundation of Central Florida got formed. And under that, we have three vibrant programs.
Okay.
I'm about to share. So,
yes.
The first one is the United Foundation of Central Florida's after school enrichment and mentoring program called Future Leaders United. Everyone that is a part of the group is a future leader, and they don't have to like each other, but they must respect each other and work well.
Well, that's some good background training there to give to not just young people, but people in general.
Yes.
Yeah, that's an excellent foundation for real. And what's the second?
The second one is our educational scholarship. I learned from Mr. Harris Rosen many, many years ago that owns Rosen Hotels, about eight of them here in Central Florida, that I need to have feeder schools, and I definitely need to start off with giving some scholarships, because that will motivate our young people to higher education, because some just don't know where to begin or see the first dollar of how to even think about considering college. So that got started in 2017. So although the mentoring program started 2 years before that, in 2017,
So we had a little break in the recording there. So you were saying that you have to have the feeder schools because some kids don't know where to get the first dollar.
Yes, absolutely. And with the feeder schools, that meant that I have to include elementary, middle, and high school. And this way they're going, you know, from the elementary to the middle and then to the high. But also you start your grooming from there. The grooming starts from then, and then the interest for them to participate in a program that offers scholarship is huge. Because, yes, it gives them a way into college and higher education, or even vocational schools, not just pushing college alone, vocational schools, because we have two in vocational schools. So that's how the educational scholarship came about. And I'm super excited that to date we've given away over $130,000 in educational scholarships.
That is fantastic. And
Thank you. Goodness. That's just from friends.
Wow. Yeah. That made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I mean, that is a phenomenal accomplishment. And about how many kids would you say have gone through the program?
Well, to date, we have 119 students that have gone through the program. They've all graduated with 114 heading off to college, all enrolled in college. Some are starting to graduate. Three in the military and two in the workforce / vocational school.
Oh my goodness. Give yourself, as Miss Lou would say, clap yourself. That is an awesome achievement. Awesome. And what's the third prong of the United Foundation of Central Florida?
The third prong is our food insecurity program that started, believe it or not, back in 2015, because we saw a need even back then that our community lacked food. Some of our students went home to no food. So that's one of the biggest costs in our program is transportation and food. So we started the food insecurities program back in 2015, but I wouldn't be telling you or your listening audience anything that in 2020, it became a priority. Pandemic.
Yes, that became a priority. Oh my goodness. And so how did you have to switch or to pivot to deal with the pandemic and food insecurity in Central Florida?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because the phone call came to me as a solutions driver and someone they know could answer the call of our Head Start parents were looking for food at the center. There is a Pine Hills Community Center here in town, and we live in the Pine Hills area, and that phone call was made and the need was presented to the center, and it was, let me call Sandra Fatmi Hall. She has the answer. I'm thinking, wow. Okay. So then I reached out to a few friends and I turned to Dennis and I said, wow, what are we going to do? And we said, well, let's put together a drive-through food drive, because I've been involved in one since 2018 with the senators and different individuals here. And that's what we did. So I honestly thought that this was only going to be for a week. When I was asked, well, how many families do you think we should serve? I said 300. Mm-hmm. Well, to my surprise, we did meet the goal of 300. And, you know, shout out to Dr. Trisha Bailey and everyone else that came on board to help us with putting together the funding for the 300 families. But I will say this, my heart was broken. It was a bittersweet day because we matched the 300 families that we wanted to do. But it was bitter from a standpoint of we turned away over 250 cars.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So I said, now I have to tell you, honestly, I said to those cars as they came through the drive-through, see you next week. Now, I didn't know what I was saying.
Because you didn't know where the food was going to come from.
I didn't know where the food was going to come from or the funding. So I said, God, I need your help. So, you know, fast forward to today, 13 and a half months later, mm-hmm. it's God, it's the village, it's unity, it's community, it's everyone that stepped up. And when I tell you, we've taken anywhere from $10 donations to thousands of dollar donations. Mm-hmm. And to date, I will say that our community is so much better for it. Our crime numbers went down.
Wow.
Because it was one less thing for people to think mm-hmm. about. And just to give a visual to your listening audience, the community that we served, we had 30 to 40% of those residents coming from the Disney and the hotel industry area. So you know those areas
right,
were down.
Completely shut down. So people who would previously be able to feed themselves now couldn't, on top of those who had a food shortage problem prior to the pandemic.
That's correct. So, you know, it's so humbling to know that as of today, as we mm-hmm. speak, that over 1,050,000 meals have been provided today to the Pine Hills area and surrounding communities. I just can't begin to tell you how humbling that is.
Oh my goodness. Once again, Sandra, the hair on the back of my neck is standing up. That is phenomenal. That is phenomenal mm-hmm. and really a testament to you and your organizational skills. That is awesome. Awesome. So tell us a little bit about what the Pine Hills neighborhood, what's the makeup of that neighborhood?
The Pine Hills neighborhood approximately has over 72,000 residents mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And the makeup of that residence breakdown would be, I would say, over 65-70% immigrants.
Wow.
That live here, and a high Haitian, Jamaican, Caribbean population yeah. that's here. And let's not forget our growing Hispanic community.
Right. In Central right? Florida.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That is awesome. That yeah. is quite a myth. You know, I'm sorry, quite a large amount. Can you tell me, when you think back, has life in America been different than you imagined it would be, even when you got here as a teenager?
Well, yes, I'm going to definitely mm-hmm. say that. You know, after facing the racism mm-hmm. that I talked about a little earlier, mm-hmm. I have to tell you that one of the things that was a surprise to me, and remember, I came here mm-hmm. young, was that I felt that people that looked like me would work together mm-hmm. more. That's not what I saw. Mm-hmm. And even today, that's not what I've seen.
Is when even you say today. People who look like you, are you talking about within the Caribbean community, or are you talking about a disconnect maybe between the Black American community and the Caribbean community?
You know, I will tell you that I initially thought that, and I saw that mm-hmm. as well, but it's a disconnect all around. Mm. It's a disconnect all around that I've seen, where sometimes you'll hear something like, okay, those from Jamaica don't like Trinidadians or different nationalities. Not so much. Everyone, we all feel as if our country is mm-hmm. the best.
Right. True.
Right? Yeah, we all. I mean, absolutely. And do we come together on music, sports, and things that bring us together from a non- what's the word I'm looking for? Competitive mm-hmm. stance, right? So we do come together on that. However, I do feel as if sometimes you would think if you have someone that struggled or someone that looks like you, whether they're from the Caribbean, from the Caribbean or born here, that will be more supportive, mm-hmm. that will pull you up. Mm-hmm. Help in any way that they can. I have not really seen that from a number of people. You'll get it from some, but not all.
You think, though, that's because America on a whole is more of an individualistic society as opposed to the Caribbean, where we tend to be more community oriented?
That's a great question. I never thought about it. I think it could be that. It could be also us as individuals, the way that we feel. Because I'll tell you, not because I'm Jamaican, I do see a lot of what was instilled in us, such as help your fellow man, right? If you can give a hand, if you can help someone to go to school, you would. But what I see here, it's a, no, I don't want that person to get ahead, so I won't help. Or let me hold back this information. And let me tell you where that's also coming from. It's coming from when United Foundation of Central Florida, when we went around to the different communities, to the Orange County and the different churches and stuff here, we were told by people that look like us that we're not needed here. Yes, the United Foundation of Central Florida is not needed here. There's enough organizations by people that look like us that's fulfilling the need that's not needed here. And now, today, I look at those same individuals because they're still here and they're still around. And it's, oh my goodness, you've done such an amazing job.
So it's I think it's the competition. It's a competition that people tend to feel threatened. And it's something that Jamaicans, immigrants have had to deal with amongst themselves and among and from Native people. It's the competition, I think, that's a big part of it. But, you know, you've talked about what you've learned in Jamaica that you've kept with you. But as you're going along, you've talked about racism. What has been your biggest challenge in living in America?
My biggest challenge,
you think, it's the competition that is just so different from what you were taught.
Because I didn't grow up seeing that. You know, I know that I was only in Jamaica for a short time, but I didn't grow up seeing that. So for me, that was rather interesting to see.
Grew up in a Jamaican household when you came here. But Sandra, you've done very well, you know, in your professional life and certainly in your philanthropic life. And as a Black woman working in this very, you know, white environment that is in America, what piece of advice could you give to a young woman coming up now who's struggling with all of what you've talked about? What advice would you give them? Young woman or a young man?
Well, here's the advice that I give to them. I tell them to, you know, please stay focused. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're thinking about what you came through yourself and what you did, what you overcame, distractions come around you, especially as a young person, from peer pressure, you know, from even at home sometimes, because they weren't taught some of these things themselves. So they can only teach you and instill in you what they were taught, right? So I would instill in them to put education first. A number of our parents, still today, oh, you just have to graduate high school. And that's like the biggest accomplishment ever. Right? So no, education is the gateway to success. So I would tell them to stay focused on education. Definitely strive to be the best version of themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? Because remember, they have to be able to sustain themselves, right? So I try to tell them that. I always tell them about watching the friends that they keep too, because that defines and tells you who you are. I see it all day long. You know, and then you'll hear about this wrong place, wrong time, you know, because you were surrounded by individuals that were not so upstanding. Yeah. Of course. I would definitely tell them that it's important from a young age, I would say, to take care of your health. I will tell you that's extremely important.
Definitely.
Once you're 30 years old, after, you will absolutely feel it, right? So you can indulge a little bit and have a little cheesecake or something, but please take care of your health.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, how do you stay? I know you've kept what you've learned in Jamaica and in your Jamaican household growing up, but how do you stay connected to Jamaica and Jamaicans outside of your United Foundation of Central Thought? How do you stay connected to Jamaica?
Well, in several mm-hmm. ways. Let's start with the Jamaica diaspora. Mm-hmm. As you know so well, as you taking the mantle and leading us into where we are today. We started with the Jamaica diaspora. So for 4 years plus, I was a secretariat for the Jamaica Diaspora Advisory Board member, Wayne mm-hmm. Golden, for the Southern USA. Okay. And that involved giving over 65% of my time to Jamaica. So what did that mm-hmm. look like? Well, I made several trips. I gave off my time mm-hmm. whenever there were conference calls or events, putting together yes. events from town halls, right, to everything else that when the Minister of Foreign Affairs came up or anyone that came up, that took a lot of time, mm-hmm. you know, to instill and to help our community grow and to give back to our individuals, to educate them with factual information, because any Jamaican listening to this will tell you that's what them say. And I don't know who is them. Them talk a lot.
Oh, gosh. That's so true. So true.
Yeah. So we wanted to get the right information out there, as you have done over the years as well. So that's one way. And as the past president of a local Jamaican organization here in Central Florida, in 2012, which was our 50th celebration of our independence, we took a donation to help the Maxfield Children's Home with over 50% of the children's home when it was destroyed. Right. So to be put towards helping to rebuild the home. And yes, we definitely did. I remember giving it to the minister, Lisa mm-hmm. Hanna. Right. So that was way back then. And then, of course, besides traveling there 5-6 times a year, that's definitely depositing to the economy.
Yeah, but you continue to keep the Jamaican flag flying high in the United yes. States. So, you know, that's one of the things that we really want to celebrate on this podcast, is Jamaicans who come here at various ages, various stages of life, but continue to champion Jamaica. No, you know, Sandra, you're a dynamic woman. I mean, you only have to listen to you speak to know. But is there anything that you wish you had done that you hadn't done yet and thinking about doing?
Well, you know, that's very funny. And this will pay homage to you as well. I still, in the back of my mind, would love to be an attorney. And I don't know when I would find time to do that.
Oh, please, find the time. Find the time. The profession could definitely use passionate advocates such as yourself. So, you know, and a lot of, you know, you've done this, a lot of law schools, not a lot, but some law schools now have evening classes. So you can do an evening program. So that's interesting. That's interesting. But besides becoming an attorney, what are your immediate plans for the future? What's next for you?
What's next? Well, I have to tell you, this took prayer, the next step that I'm getting ready to tell you about. I mean, prayer after 11 years of asking me to do mm-hmm. this. And I will say I'm super duper excited, because if I'm not excited about it, then I shouldn't get involved in it. But I'm super duper excited because I will not allow this position to change me. I will change the position for the better. But I am considering a run. Not considering. I am a candidate. Okay. Not considering at all. Let's just make that clear. I am a candidate to be the next Orange County District 2 Commissioner here in Central Florida. And I'm super duper excited
about
it.
Well, that is awesome. That is awesome. And so inspirational, you know, that you've taken this leap. And again, you know, to inspire not just me, but others listening, that there are so many different facets to life. I think when you're young and you get your first job, or you graduate from college and you start in a profession, you think this is what it's going to be for the rest of your life. But you, Sandra, have shown us that by your life, that you've started out in finance in New York, you came to Florida, and you've pivoted to philanthropy, and now you're pivoting to public office. That is awesome.
Thank you, ma'am. I truly appreciate it. And you've been there along the way. And I thank you for your encouraging words and support as well. So I'm excited. I'm excited to service a district with 8 different areas. And they're all different. About 3 of them are pretty similar, but they're different. But there is a need for my proven leadership, community advocacy, neighborhood and business championship. And with my sincere public servant's heart, I do know that a positive difference can be made and will be made in these areas.
Excellent. Yes. I think it's a natural progression for you, Sandra. So I wish you all the best with that. I am so happy that you took the time from everything that you have going on to spend some time with me and the listeners to the podcast, You Only Know Half. And for showing us that, you know, we can do something that might intimidate us. We can really get out there and get it done. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. I truly appreciate the consideration and the opportunity to always empower, educate, inform. Thank you for doing that through this podcast, because you're right. If they only know half is is absolutely correct, because there's no way, you know, you only know half is right, because there's no way that anyone would ever know any of these things unless they've been around us that have come on to this podcast for any length of time. So it's awesome to be an inspiration to help others, because whenever I too get the opportunity to hear from others, I take it hook, line, and sinker and take the positive from it and definitely grow from it. So thank you,
my dear. It's been a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, You Only Know Half was brought to you today by the law offices of Dahlia Walker, practicing immigration law across the United States. Check out their website at www.walkerhuntington.com and by the Jamaica Tourist Board. Jamaica, heartbeat of the Caribbean. Feel the rhythm of Jamaica. www.visitjamaica.com. Thank you, listeners, for spending time with us today on the podcast. I encourage you to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at You Only Know Half to get reminders of our weekly episodes. Remember, we're showcasing Jamaicans living in America in celebration of our heritage, our journey, and our present. If you know someone who is a personification of a Jamaican immigrant and you think we should feature them, please send us an email at youonlyknowhalf@gmail.com. And please support our sponsors who make the program possible, the law offices of Dahlia Walker and the Jamaica Tourist Board. Visit our website at www.youonlyknowhalf.com to listen to past episodes and subscribe to future episodes. We're available on Amazon, Spotify, Audible, Podbeam, and Google Podcasts. So please call a friend and tell a friend about the podcast, because you only know half. Walk with your friends.